so many things. Everybody entirely crystal clear about what we're doing. That's really good, isn't it? Sometimes these things, they need to sink in a little bit. It takes a time to kind of get your head around these things. So, Okay, well, if that is the case, then we can continue on the suttas. And so far we have had a look at various ways of dealing or doing right effort, how to think about people so as not to give rise to ill will. That's been one of the main themes of dealing with ill will, that particular hindrance. And we have been looking at sensual desire. And now I want to have a little bit of a look at impermanence, because this is one of the other reflections that we can use on the spiritual path. And of course, the idea of impermanence is a bit more broad, but if we think about it in the right way, it means that we are also undermining the defilements of the mind at the same time. A very important aspect of impermanence is, of course, the death recollection itself. And if we use these things wisely, they can have a very beneficial effect on our practice. So the next sutta page 41 already. Wow, moving forward, this is really good. So there's some chance you might actually be able to get somewhere. Now, actually, have I got this right? I think I got the wrong one. Yeah, 38. Oh, gone ahead of myself. Okay. Oh, no. One step back. Okay. getting a bit too excited there. Okay. Good. So let's go to page 30. So this is also about impermanence, and this is more directly about death contemplation itself. And this is one of the suttas that I remember when I first read it, I thought it was really, really neat sutta. It's another one of those suttas that has a very nice simile in it. And it is a conversation between the Buddha and King Pasenadi. King Pasenadi of Kosala, one of the great kings of that day in India. And he was one of those kings that was a very devout disciple of the Buddha. And there's a whole Sangyutta, a whole collection of connected discourses. And all they do is talk about the conversations between King Pasenadi of Kosala and the Buddha. And in one of those conversations, King Pasenadi, he comes to the Buddha. It's just after the meal, right? So he has just eaten, and he has eaten too much. So he's huffing and puffing away as he is coming up to the Buddha. And the Buddha kind of looks at him, and he teaches him this verse. And this verse is about how to diet, how to kind of keep your moderation in eating. That's what this verse is about. It's the first verse in the world about how to lose weight. It's a weight-losing verse. And it's the Buddha, right? Sometimes it is interesting how the Buddha, some of the things are so down to earth, right? It's the kind of thing that you would expect people to do kind of when they are friends and this sort of thing. And it kind of, again, it makes the Buddha seem like a... He seems approachable, right? He seems like a person you can talk to about all kinds of things, even giving you advice on how to lose weight. So there you are. Yeah. So if you wish, I can read that sutta out for you later on, but it's not that interesting in this context. But it's kind of sweet, if you like. Yeah. So let us see what the Buddha has to say to King Pasenadi in this context. At Savati, then, in the middle of the day, King Pasenadi of Kosala approached the Blessed One. The Blessed One said to him, as he was sitting to one side, "Now, where are you coming from, great king, in the middle of the day?" "Just now, venerable sir, I have been engaged in those affairs of kingship, typical for head-anointed Kattiya kings, who are intoxicated with the intoxication of sovereignty, power, in other words, who are obsessed by greed for sensual pleasures, who have attained stable control in their country, and who rule having conquered a great sphere of territory on earth." So he's very honest, isn't he, about his life. So kind of nice. It shows you that basically he's a powerful king, right? He has all of these things. And this idea, it says here, at coming, at where are you coming from? In the middle of the day. The idea with that is that it is an unusual time of the day to visit the Buddha. Usually you visit the Buddha in the evening, not in the middle of the day. So why are you coming now? There must be something going on. This is what that means, kind of. So then the Buddha replies to him. He says he's been engaged in all those affairs of kingship. And then the Buddha replies to him, what do you think, great king? Here a man would come to you from the east, one who is trustworthy and reliable. Having approached, he would tell you, for sure, great king, you should know this. I am coming from the east, and there I saw a great mountain, high as the clouds, coming this way, crushing all living beings. Do whatever you think should be done, great king. Then a second man would come to you from the west, and a third man would come to you from the north, and a fourth man would come to you from the south, one who is trustworthy and reliable. Having approached, he would tell you, for sure, great king, you should know this. I am coming from the south, and there I saw a great mountain, high as the clouds, coming this way, crushing all living beings. Do whatever you think should be done, great king. If, great king, such a great peril should arise, such a terrible destruction of human life, the human state or the human condition being so difficult to obtain, what should be done? Right? This is like a death contemplation. There's mountains coming from all sides, and you are standing in the middle, waiting for these mountains to come, crushing you down, right? It's kind of a scary scenario, some kind of horror movie or something like that. Maybe you will see this in the modern day. But here the Buddha is kind of using this as a simile. If, venerable sir, such a great peril should arise, such a terrible destruction of human life, the human state being so difficult to obtain, what else should be done but to live by the Dhamma, to live righteously and to do wholesome and meritorious deeds? I inform you, great king, I announce to you, great king, old age and death are rolling in on you. When old age and death are rolling in on you, great king, what should be done? As old age and death are rolling in on me, venerable sir, what else should be done but to live by the Dhamma, to live righteously, and to do wholesome and meritorious deeds? Yeah, so this is the idea that old age and death, they are like these mountains coming towards us from all directions. It is utterly inescapable, and every being everywhere must be crushed under these terrible mountains, right? That is what he's saying here. And he's just making it very vivid, because you can sort of see yourself standing, seeing these mountains walking in on you from all directions, knowing that you're going to be crushed. It makes it very kind of powerful impression, obviously, on the king. And of course, the point here is that the moment you realize these things, the moment you see these mountains coming from all sides, it does something to your mind, right? It clarifies your priorities. It tells you what is important in life, what is important in this world. Your mind clears up. Wait a minute, I'm going to die. It's sure. I can see the mountains coming. We forget about this. We think it is always sometime in the future. But actually, we have no idea when it's going to be. And this clears up the intoxication of life. And it makes it clear what we need to do. We need to do well. We need to make merit. We need to act with kindness and compassion. That is basically what he is saying here. And also it has this nice idea here of the human state or the human existence being so difficult to obtain. This is the sort of thing that you will often hear in Buddhist circles, and here it is also found in the Samyutta Nikaya. It's rare, it's a great opportunity when you are a human being to practice in the right way. This is where the Buddhas come, right, among human beings. This is where the spiritual path usually is practiced, and it's difficult to become a human being. There's a nice number of suttas in the early part of the Anguttara Nikaya that talk about all the rare things in the world. It's rare to become a human. It is rare for a Buddha to arise. It is rare to be born in the country where the Buddha has arisen. It is rare to be intelligent enough and wise enough to understand the Buddha's teachings. And one thing after the other, and eventually you realize the chances of actually coming to hear the Dhamma and practicing it is actually quite slim. And this is what that is about, really. So it's a rare opportunity. And of course, again, this also kind of gets you going, right? You just have no idea what's going to happen after you die. It is so uncertain. Now you have the chance. Now the opportunity is here. The Buddha Gautama's teaching is still around. Don't have to wait for Maitreya. Don't have to do anything like that. Now is the opportunity. Grasp the day. What is it famous? Carpe diem, which is the kind of the Latin. Seize the day, carpe diem in Latin, I think it's called. And you kind of, yeah, seize the day and kind of take the opportunity now that you have it. So that is what that is really all about. So the Buddha then says, so it is, great king, so it is. As old age and death are rolling in on you, what else should you do, should be done, but to live by the Dhamma, to live righteously, and to do wholesome and meritorious deeds. The aging is actually not a good translation. Actually, it really means old age, just to be clear about that. This is one of these slight mis-renderings in my opinion, in this particular thing. Actually, Bhikkhu Bodhi changed that translation after me pointing it out to him, that is not a good translation. So this is one of the things that he changed in the Anguttara Nikaya. So you will see the difference there. And if you don't like it, you can blame me for that change. So now we are going to move on to the next sutta, the sutta called Themes. And this is a continuation of the same theme. That's why it's called Themes. I'm being silly. So that's not why it's called Themes, but it is a continuation of the same theme. It's a little bit about death contemplation, contemplation of old age, and all of these kind of things. And it's one of those suttas that is really meant for everybody, as we shall see in a second here. So this is how it goes. This is the Buddha speaking again. Because there are these five themes that should often be reflected upon by a woman or a man, by a householder or one gone forth. What five? A woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth should often reflect thus. I am subject to old age. There you are, old age. So there you go. I am not exempt from old age. A woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth should often reflect thus. I am subject to illness, not exempt from illness. A woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth should often reflect thus. I am subject to death, I am not exempt from death. A woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth should often reflect thus. I must be parted and separated from everyone and everything dear and agreeable to me. A woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth should often reflect thus. I am the owner of my kamma, the heir of my kamma. I have kamma as my origin, kamma as my relative, kamma as my resort. I will be the heir of whatever kamma, good or bad, that I do. So here, again, setting out the contracted form, the abbreviated form of the sutta, and then going into details afterwards. So what is interesting here is that the Buddha specifically says that this a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, should use or reflect on these things, right? So here he's deliberately being very inclusive, and that must mean that this is a particularly important reflection that everyone should use, and the idea that he's specifically including householders obviously is significant in this particular case. So that is the one of the important things and one of the reasons why I think this is very suitable for these kind of things. Sometimes people think that contemplating death and old age is really depressing and sad. Don't want to hear about that. I want to hear about life is how wonderful it is and all these kind of things. But this is reality, right? And reality sometimes is like this. And of course the point of this is not to depress you. If you feel depressed about the fact that you're going to die, then of course you have to be careful with these kind of reflections. But these kind of reflections, if they are done wisely and in a skillful way, they are incredibly good boost on the spiritual path. They clear the mind, they remove the intoxications, they really kind of clarify what is important in life and what you're supposed to be doing. And this is why these things actually are very important. So never think that these things are, they might be slightly depressing for you, but it's a matter of learning how to think about these things in the right way, and then any depression or sadness about these things disappears straight away. And then you think, yay, I'm going to die one day. What a wonderful thing that is. Much worse to live until eternity, right? Imagine keeping living for eternity. That would be really terrible. So actually, death isn't as bad as it's sometimes made out to be. So don't be too worried about that. So, here we go. First one. For the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, often reflect thus? I am subject to old age. I am not exempt from old age. In their youth, beings are intoxicated with their youth. And when they are intoxicated with their youth, they engage in misconduct by body, speech, and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, the intoxication with youth is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, should often reflect thus. I am subject to old age. I have not gone beyond old age, or I am not exempt from old age. Yeah, so this is the idea here. The idea is that we get intoxicated with things. We think, yeah, I'm young, I can do whatever I want, I'm strong, right? Now, and we have no idea what is lying ahead in terms of the body kind of falling apart when you get old and all this kind of stuff. Before you know it, it is too late. You had the opportunity, you didn't grasp it. So the idea here is to get into this right view of life as soon as possible. And one of the interesting things here, one of the ways of looking at this, is to remember that when there is youth, there must also be old age. The word youth, the reality of being youthful, only exists in contradistinction to the idea of old age. The word youth couldn't exist if there was no old age. Old age wouldn't exist if there wasn't youth. These are two sides of the same coin. So what it means is that old age, if you are young, right, old age is already inside of you. Right? It's already there. It's just waiting to come out. It's waiting to kind of sprout forth. Right? And this is the idea of two sides of the coin. If one thing is there, the other side must also be there. So in a sense, it is about feeling and experiencing this idea that we are already part and parcel of who we are. And there's another nice sutta called the Sukkuma Sutta, which means something like refined or something like that. And the Buddha talks about his own experiences when he was living the home life. And he talks about, you know, seeing somebody who was old. And he reflects that it would be inappropriate for me to be disgusted or to be repelled when I see somebody who is old, because actually I too will become old one day. So if I'm repelled by this person who is old, well, sometimes it can be quite repulsive. If you see somebody really, really old, they're about to die, right? And they kind of look really quite terrible, and you have to clean them up in all ways because they can't look after themselves anymore, and they have Alzheimer's or whatever it is. Sometimes it can actually be a little bit repelling. But when you know that you have the same nature, when you know that one day you are likely to be in exactly the same situation, if you are repelled by that, what you really are repelled by is by yourself. Because it's already inside of you. You are also one day will be in that kind of situation. And that kind of clarifies the mind a little bit. It takes away that intoxication. Yeah, I'm young, I can do whatever I want. No, you can't do that because you are in the same boat and you will end up in the same situation one day. And then, of course, when you do that, you remember to prioritize correctly what is really important in life, to do those things that will carry you through in the best possible way and give you an advantage as well into the new existence in the future. So this is about D, removing the intoxicants and becoming clear about what really matters in life. This is what this really is about. So remember that. Sometimes it is quite useful to see these things, see people who are dead or who are ill or who are old or whatever, and then to kind of get some clarity about the reality of these things. You know, we live in society that these things are more and more kind of confined and kind of hidden behind facades. I don't know what it is like here in Malaysia, but in the West it is a lot like that. And when you kind of become old, you can kind of put away in a kind of old age home, right? And you kind of stay there until you die, and then the funeral parlor looks after your body. And you never really see dead people. And yes, you see people who are old, but even that you don't see it so much because the nurses look after it and that kind of stuff. So it is important sometimes to kind of get more clarity about these things. Anyway, so this is the purpose of these kind of things, this kind of exemption, this kind of thinking, is that then you get clarity and you know what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to live. Second one, and for the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, often reflect thus? I am subject to illness, I am not exempt from illness. In a state of health, beings are intoxicated with their health. And when they are intoxicated with their health, they engage in misconduct by body, speech and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, the intoxication with health is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, should often reflect thus, I am subject to illness, I have not gone beyond illness. And one way of knowing whether you have kind of understood this or not is to check out what you say when you go to the doctor. This is what Ajahn Brahm always says, right? So what do you say when you go to the doctor? Do you say to the doctor, something is wrong with me, doctor? Or do you say to the doctor, something is right with me, doctor? I'm sick again today. What do you actually say? If you say something wrong, there you are, then that means you are still slightly intoxicated by these things, right? But if you say, wow, something is right with me, doctor, today I'm sick again. And the doctor will look at you twice, just check out your mental health at the same time, right? Wondering if you are okay. See, exactly. Sends you off to the psychiatrist instead. That's exactly right. So, but that is the reality of it. Because again, health and illness, health and sickness are two sides of the same coin. These bodies of ours are really, I'm amazed that these bodies even work as well as they do. You see how complicated they are and how much stuff is going on inside our bodies. All these blood vessels running around, tiny little blood vessels, many places, all the nerves, all the lymph system, all, you know, the brains, all this kind of stuff has to somehow work together. It's a miracle, in my opinion, that it works at all. Let alone that we should become sick every now and again. It seems kind of obvious when you think about the complexity of this body. So it's not really... So sometimes I think, well, I'm really lucky to actually be reasonably healthy. Probably should expect more illness when I look at how this body actually is built up. So it is one of those realities, right? And when you expect that you can become ill and sick at any time, then again, you kind of use your time more wisely. You don't allow yourself to be intoxicated by health. You don't allow yourself to kind of be, carried away by these things. And sometimes, again, illness too can be very can be quite terrible, and almost like you feel a sense of aversion when you see people who are really ill. I don't know if you. One of the things that really shocked me is already a couple of years ago now, but I remember in Australia they have introduced something they called plain packaging on the cigarette packages. You know about that? And plain packaging, you're not allowed to have any fancy logos or anything like that. They have chosen the most ugly color you can choose for the packaging, and that color looks a bit like this. It's true, it's a little bit like, not like these robes. These robes are actually not too bad, but there are some robes in Thailand that look kind of almost greenish brown. This one is actually perhaps a little bit more attractive. And so very close to some of that greenish brown color you get from the jackfruit in Thailand. Very similar to that is what they use on this plain packaging in Australia. And then there's a big warning, right? You will get lung cancer or whatever, right? Big, big letters. And it says Marlboro in tiny letters on the bottom. You can barely see it says Marlboro or whatever on the bottom. And then it has a big picture what it looks like when you get lung cancer. Yeah, I've seen that. And it's terrible. And you see, and often what they have the before picture and the after picture. So you see this kind of beautiful young woman or handsome young man, right? Really kind of very, very nice looking. And then you see the same person a few years later in a picture, completely emaciated, thin, gaunt, on the deathbed, lying down, barely able to move. And it's like, it's almost like it's too much to see. And of course, that's the whole point of these things. It is to remind you of the dangers of smoking, right? But it's really in your face. And you get a very strong feeling for what sickness can actually do to the physical body. It can really destroy the physical body completely. And that is what you see in those pictures there. So that reminds you of the nature of this body. And you don't have to smoke, of course, for these things to happen. You get cancers, you get all kinds of things. And cancers often also can have a very, very debilitating and destructive effect on the body, of course. And one of the things that I often like to think of is that these illnesses, quite likely there are some of these illnesses in my body right now, right? They're probably there, waiting to kind of spring out as soon as the kind of conditions are right. There's probably everybody has a few cancer cells in their body, and then when the conditions are right, they start to grow or whatever. We all probably have some degree of clogging in our arteries, just waiting for heart disease to kind of blossom out, bang, and then you've had it. So it's already all here, so kind of feel the body. If in that way, the body feels very different when you think of it like that than when you think about it in an ordinary way. Don't think too much like that because it might make you feel very sad again. But a little bit like that, I think, is good because it is a reality that is always there and it shows you the danger of these things. But now comes the one that is the most important one of these three, and that is the death contemplation. And for the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, often reflect thus, I am subject to death, I am not exempt from death. During their lives, beings are intoxicated with life, and when they are intoxicated with life, they engage in misconduct by body, speech, and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, the intoxication with life is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, should often reflect thus, I am subject to death, I have not gone beyond death. So this is a death contemplation, and of course this is the most powerful one of all of these contemplations. And when you read the suttas, it is often spoken of by the Buddha, the idea of death contemplation. Ill sickness contemplation, old age contemplation are spoken of much more rarely, but the death contemplation is really the crucial one and the one that is most important to focus on. Right? Very similar to what we were seeing before, the idea of borrowed goods is also very much included and related to that. But to remind ourselves that we are going to die, and life is always uncertain, very unreliable. We know one thing is certain, we're going to die. One thing is uncertain is when we are going to die. And we tend to think that death is always off somewhere in the future. But one day it's going to be today. One day it's going to be now, right? And the only time you can be ready for that is now. So that is why it is important that now is the time to get this feeling that you could die at any time. And if you get this feeling in the present moment that you could die at any time, it means that you start to let go of all of those things that belong to this world. Because this world is no more important. When you know that you're going to die, maybe you're going to die tomorrow or whatever, and all the things that pertain to this life start to become irrelevant. Right? You're not going to think with so much desire on your about your next car or your next relationship if you're going to die tomorrow. It's kind of a waste of time to think about your next car if you're going to die tomorrow. Right? So, and of course, that I'm exaggerating there, but any kind of desire, any kind of ill will belongs to this world. So your mind tends to stabilize. Your mind tends to become pure. Your mind tends to let go of all of those things that belong to this world when you reflect in this way. And this is the power of that death contemplation. So what you have to do is you have to make it real, the fact that you can die at any time. This is one of those important things. And how can we make that real? And the one way to make it real is to remember all the different ways it is possible to die. We just had a look at illnesses before. And of course, the point is there that illnesses, as I said, may already be inside of your body, ready to kind of jump out any time and kind of take you away. Or you walk down on the street and some kind of crazy driver. Are there many crazy drivers here in Malaysia? Are there many? Yes, there are many crazy drivers everywhere, right? So some places more crazy than others. Every time I go to India, I think this might be my last trip. I may never come back from India because the drivers over there are really, really crazy. Yeah. So degrees of craziness. But there are so many ways that it's possible to die. And sometimes you die from the strangest kind of things. You know, I might walk in the forest at our monastery, at Bodhinyana Monastery, and suddenly there's a snake there, right? And it looks like only a tiny little snake. But tiny snakes are often very dangerous, and they bite you, and that might be the end of you. There are people in the newspapers in Australia that have died from tiny little snakes biting them because the venom was so incredibly poisonous. Or you just stumble somewhere, you fall over, and you have a bad fall, bang, you are dead. So remember this. One of the great ways for a monastic to remember the kind of the idea of death is because we go to funerals all the time. And when you go to funerals all the time, you see that people die in all ages. Sometimes you see the tiny little coffin like that. And you know that inside, there's only a baby that will fit inside a coffin like that. Sometimes you see the small little coffins. Sometimes you see coffins that are a little bit larger. Sometimes you see people in their youth, in their 20s, passing away, right? People die for all kinds of reasons at any time in life. And because of that, it's important to realize that we are not really exempt from that. It feels like we're going to go on into the future, but it's often just a delusion. It's an illusion. We don't actually have no idea when it is our time to pass away. So don't allow this to depress you again, because sometimes these things might sound depressing. Use them instead to remind you of the importance of living well in the here and now, because it is so uncertain when that possibility will return and come back to you. This is using death contemplation in a wise way. And then eventually, when you sit down and you meditate, and you kind of get this feeling that maybe I will never rise up again after this meditation, right? Maybe this is the end. So you sit there in your meditation, and when you get that feeling, this is maybe the last thing I'm doing in my life, sitting here in meditation. It's a wonderful way of dying, right? You're sitting there peacefully, wow, everything is very nice, and then bang, finished. And then you continue your meditation in the next life. Like the ghost is meditating on into the next existence. The ghost leaving the body like this, meditating on her. It's possible, right? Maybe ghosts too can meditate. Maybe that's possible. There are some nice, Ajahn Brahm had this picture of this person who had died in a cave in Thailand. And this picture is of this skeleton. And the skeleton is sitting cross-legged like this, right? Somebody who had literally died in meditation practice. It's quite nice. It's quite beautiful here. But the point here is that when you do that, when you have a sense of your own mortality and you bring it into the present moment like that, it takes away all the nonsense that relates to this world, all the petty little things that occupy our minds, all the stupid little desires, the stupid little angers and negativity we have. All that goes out of the window because we realize, suddenly it becomes very clear to us, it belongs to this world. These things are irrelevant if I'm going on and moving on into a new existence. And that is the power of the death reflection. Removes all the intoxication, clarifies the mind, and then you can settle down. So I would recommend you to try to use this reflection sometimes. See if you can use it skillfully, especially in your meditation practice. And especially if you can't become peaceful and you find it really hard, you are restless, your mind is going on about all kinds of stuff, then try to settle down. Remind yourself, why am I thinking about all of this? This is crazy. I might be out of here. All of this is just nonsense. Who knows what's going to happen next? And then see if that kind of soothes you down a little bit. And then it also enables you to let go quite a lot very often in this world. And then you're heading in the right direction here. So that is death contemplation. You can use that in your meditation practice. All you really have to do is to reflect. You don't actually have to go through. You can also go through the process of death, if you like, and see what that feels like. Or we can just go back and forth, do walking meditation or sitting meditation, and just remind yourself of the inevitableness of death, and that it might happen at any time. And just that reflection, reminding yourself of that, once that starts to take hold in your mind, becomes a power in your mind, it can become a very useful tool in your arsenal, right, to defeat Mara. You need different kind of weapons to defeat Mara, because Mara is problematic. And this is one of these things. Mara actually means death anyway, so it's kind of it's all related to each other here. So this is one way of using that death contemplation. Another nice way of using death contemplation is just to remind yourself every now and again that I could die today, and because I could die today, it is important that I treat the people around me in the right way. I know of one man, he used to do this, and every morning when he left his house and he left his wife and children, he would remind himself, I could die today at work. I'm going to have to leave my household in a good way, not arguing or anything like that, but in a positive way when I leave this morning. And this was his way of using death contemplation to help him to live better, because it's very painful to die if you have just had an argument with somebody who's very dear to you, right? And you die and you feel really bad about it afterwards. So you have a sense of good conscience if you pass away at that time. That's another nice way of using the death contemplation here. Okay, so see if that works for you. And the idea here is to bring death as close to the present moment as you possibly can. The closer it is, the more realistic it is, and the more ability you will have to let go of things. Okay, let's have a look at the last two contemplations here. And for the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, often reflect thus? I must be parted and separated from everyone and everything dear and agreeable to me. Beings have desire and lust in regard to those people and things that are dear and agreeable, and excited by this lust or desire, they engage in misconduct by body, speech, and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, the desire and lust in regard to everyone and everything dear and agreeable is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, should often reflect thus, I must be parted and separated from everyone and everything dear and agreeable to me. So we have already talked about this quite a bit before in the simile of borrowed goods. So this is just another way of looking at this from another slightly different angle. And just to remind yourself that everything in your life is uncertain. Everything will go. Everything is impermanent. Everything is out of control. What is that old saying? Relax. Everything is out of control. That is kind of the Buddhist way of thinking about control. So this again kind of detaches you a little bit, and again it allows you to not worry too much about these things, because you know that they are already out of control. They are impermanent. You allow things to go according to their own nature rather than trying to control them so much. And this is one of the problems in life, the feeling that we want to control these things. We want them to be there forever. But all of these things are so uncertain and so unreliable. Everything dear and agreeable to me, people or things, all that must be parted and separated from me. So it's a nice little a reflection. I'm not going to go into that much more, because we have already talked about that quite a lot when we talked about the idea of borrowed goods. So I'm going to leave that for now and go on to the last one. And for the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, often reflect thus: I am the owner of my kamma, the heir of my kamma. I have kamma as my origin, kamma as my relative, kamma as my resort. I will be the heir of whatever kamma, good or bad, that I do. People engage in misconduct by body, speech and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, such misconduct is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, should often reflect thus: I am the owner of my kamma, the heir of my kamma. I have kamma as my origin, kamma as my relative, kamma as my resort. I will be the heir of whatever kamma, good or bad, that I do. So the owner of your kamma, the owner of your actions, all the actions that you do, intentional actions motivated by good or bad qualities, this is really what makes you up, makes you who you are as a person. It makes the experience of the world either good or bad, comes from this. And remember, one of the ways of looking at this is very simply to see the effects in this life that your actions have on your mind. So what I was saying the other day, if you look at dependent origination and you understand the links of dependent origination properly, what you see there, sankhara paccaya vijnana, sankhara leads to is conditioning consciousness. Sankhara is the will, basically, all the doing activity, same as the kamma. That kamma conditions consciousness. Whenever you do something, you either feel good about yourself or you feel bad about yourself, depending on what you do. And that affects your consciousness, right? Feeling bad is like feeling low. Feeling good is like feeling high. And the more you do of those good actions, the more high you feel. This is a legal high, right? It's not an illegal one. You're feeling high without drugs. What a wonderful thing that is. No need for any drugs. Natural high as you feel there. And the other one is the lowness that you feel due to your bad actions. So there is a direct link between sankhara and kamma and the state of your mind, how you feel. The more of those good actions you do, the more you accumulate that, the more you're lifting yourself up. It's as if you are, imagine a balloon, right? One of these balloons that can be filled with helium or whatever. And you're just adding the helium, so the balloon gets more and more lift. And as it gets more and more lift, it starts to soar, right? Soar into the sky, into the heavens, lifting up. In the same way, your mind soars. It soars up because of all the helium, all the goodness inside there. And you feel light, you feel good, you feel happiness, and all of these kind of things. So there is a direct link between how you act, how you live, and how you feel. And as you avoid doing all the bad things, what you're doing is you're cutting off all those sandbags that are holding you down, all the ropes that are kind of holding you to the ground. You're cutting them off. And because of that, again, it allows you to soar, cutting off the weights, adding helium at the same time. Whoa, you get all this beautiful uplift. And just like a balloon gets the uplift in the same way. So the direct link between your conscious experience of the world and the actions that you do. And this is what this is all about. It would be nice to talk a bit more about dependent origination, but it's quite involved. And we have many, many other interesting things to do, so we can only do so much on these retreats, unfortunately. But is all part and parcel of the same kind of Dhamma. It all fits together very beautifully here. So that is what it means to be owner of your karma. Literally, your consciousness is directly affected by these things, right? And you become heir when your consciousness has risen up to a new level because you're doing all these beautiful actions. Your mind is lifting up. Then when you get reborn in your next life, you are already at this high level. And because you're at high level, bang, you continue on at that existence in a future life, right? And then you look at yourself and think, wow, my body has changed. All this light and things coming out of me, right? That's when you are a deva in the heavenly realm, light coming off you. And you think, whoa, look, check it out. This is really cool. That's what you think. It's just you continuing, right? But now you have a different shape from what you had before. Okay, so now let us look at the other side of the equation. Let's just finish off the sutta fairly quickly because the other side is fairly easy to understand once we have seen the negative side. So then, the noble disciple reflects thus, I am not the only one who is subject to old age, not exempt from old age. All beings that come and go, that pass away and undergo rebirth, are subject to old age. None are exempt from old age. As he often reflects on this theme, the path is generated. He pursues this path, develops it, and cultivates it. As he does so, the fetters are entirely abandoned, and the underlying tendencies are uprooted. Yeah, this is quite cool, isn't it? Here you are developing the subject of reflecting on old age, and you end up becoming an arahant. That's what it's saying here. That's pretty neat. All you have to do, if you reflect on this properly all the way, that is what it's saying. It actually helps you to go all the way to arahantship. So here, the noble disciple, so this is anyone who is a serious practitioner, especially the noble ones, but anyone really who is a serious practitioner, you reflect that it's not only me, everyone, all beings are affected by old age. So what you are doing here is you are starting off with yourself, remembering your own condition, and then after a while, you universalize this and understand that this is a universal predicament that everybody has to go through. This is inescapable. It is not possible to get reborn in a realm where these things don't exist. Everywhere, wherever you go, there must be some degree of old age and eventual passing away. So this is a universal view. And once you have that universal view, that is when you can make the breakthrough to the Dhamma. The Dhamma is this idea of universalizing, seeing things properly from all possible angles, realize there is no escape from these things. Like seeing suffering, seeing impermanence, non-self. Once you see that these are universal characteristics of existence that will happen regardless of where you are, that is when you can make the breakthrough to the Dhamma and you become a stream enterer. And this is what this is about. When he often reflects on this theme, the path is generated. And the path is generated means precisely that you become a stream enterer. It's a strange expression, right? The path is generated. What does it really mean? And what it means is that once you become an Arya, the path is inside of you. It becomes part of your psychology. You know what the path is. you penetrate to the Four Noble Truths. One of the Four Noble Truths is the Noble Eightfold Path. So from now on, it is part of your psychological build-up that you know what the path is. It's inevitable. You have to practice this path. You can't avoid it anymore. Right? You must practice the Noble Eightfold Path. It's pretty good, isn't it? For most of us, if you're not an Arya, if you're not a Noble One, sometimes we are practicing the path, sometimes we are not, because we haven't really got exact clarity about what the path is all about. Because of a lack of clarity, we don't really know whether we're going in the right way or not. Once you're an Arya, once you're a noble person, the path has been generated, no choice anymore. Bang, you are railroaded in the direction of Nibbana. You're going to end up in Nibbana whether you want to or not. And of course, the whole point is that you want to. That's the whole point, right? Because you realize this is precisely the highest happiness that is possible. So because the path is generated, then you pursue that path. So at this point, you are no longer doing old age reflection. Old age reflection has taken you all the way to stream entry, which is pretty good for such a fairly simple reflection. It shows you how deeply it can go. Then you pursue that path, because you know what it is. Cultivate it. Build it up. And as you do that, the fetters, the sanyojanas, are entirely abandoned. The anusayas, underlying tendencies, are uprooted. This means you become an arahant. No more fetters, no more tied down to samsara. You are free, free at last. Everything has disappeared. So there you are. It shows you the power of these fairly simple reflections. The Buddhist path is not so complicated. Sometimes we complicate it out of all proportions. It is really fairly straightforward once you understand what it is about. Be kind. Be reasonable. Do very simple things. Listen to some nice Dhamma talks. Hear the word of the Buddha, right? That's kind of the basic things that we have to do. And sometimes we just complicate it too much. Maybe that's what I'm doing. Maybe I'm complicating it too much, right? Reading 50 pages of Dhamma. Whoa. Supposedly. But the idea is to boil this thing down to the essence of what it really is about. Okay, second one. This noble disciple reflects thus: I am not the only one who is subject to illness, not exempt from illness. All beings that come and go, that pass away and undergo rebirth, are subject to illness. None are exempt from illness. None are exempt from illness. It sounds like the nuns don't have to go through illness. Only the monks, maybe. So the really good nuns, they don't have to go through illness. The arahants, but otherwise, or maybe they have to go through illness as well, actually. But they don't. It's not a problem for them anymore, so that's the good thing here. As he often reflects on this theme, the path is generated. He pursues this path, develops it, and cultivates it. As he does so, the fetters are entirely abandoned, and the underlying tendencies are uprooted. Again, you universalize the idea of illness. You understand that you cannot escape from illness. Whatever birth you go to, whatever life you have, everywhere illness is part of reality. And then from there on, you can then make this penetrate to the path and see the path inside of you, becoming a stream enterer. This noble disciple reflects thus: I am not the only one who is subject to death, not exempt from death. All beings that come and go, that pass away and undergo rebirth, are subject to death. None are exempt from death. As he often reflects on this theme, the path is generated. He pursues this path, develops it, and cultivates it. As he does so, the fetters are entirely abandoned, and the underlying tendencies are uprooted. The noble disciple reflects thus: I am not the only one who must be parted and separated from everyone and everything dear and agreeable. All beings that come and go, that pass away and undergo rebirth, must be parted and separated from everyone and everything dear and agreeable. As he often reflects on this theme, the path is generated. He pursues this path, develops it, and cultivates it. As he does so, the fetters are entirely abandoned, and the underlying tendencies are uprooted. I think one of the things, one of the themes behind all of this is the feeling of being, in a sense, not having any power in the world, right? Of impermanence and all of these things being the real powers in the world. These things are the things that control our lives. In the end, there is no control over things. In the end, everything has to go, including your own life, including everything that is lovely and dear and agreeable to you. And there's this sense of being impotent. There's no potency there. There's no mastery over the world. And at the end, when you realize that, you are willing to give everything up because you understand that everything must eventually lead to sadness, problems, and suffering. Yeah. No sense of being in charge, basically. Yeah. The noble disciple reflects thus, I am not the only one who is the owner of my kamma, the heir of my kamma, who has kamma as his origin, kamma as his relative, kamma as his resort. Who will be the heir of whatever karma, good or bad, that one does. All beings that come and go, that pass away and undergo rebirth, are owners of the karma, heir of the karma. All have karma as their origin, karma as their relative, karma as their resort. All will be heirs of whatever karma, good or bad, that they do. As he often reflects on this theme, the path is generated. He pursues this path, develops it, and cultivates it. As he does so, the fetters are entirely abandoned, and the underlying tendencies are uprooted. So, there you are. So these things, when practiced properly, right, they lead you all the way to the end of the path, all the way to the very highest happiness, the ending of all suffering, ending of all defilement. Everything that is good in the world can come out of these simple reflections. What a wonderful thing that is. So, any quick questions before we have another break? Everybody okay? Everybody kind of had enough now? Feeling a bit sleepy? Okay. So let's have another half an hour's break, and let's have some nice meditation together, and then we'll do some more Q&A at the very end. Okay.